will commence in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. For the week beginning July 14, 2006, this is the Rain Report, Ham Radio's audio feature magazine of the Internet. I'm Neil Schaefer, AA9KK. Some folks say amateur radio's involvement in public service is a waste of time and often only benefits large corporate sponsors and local government at ham radio's expense. On the other hand, public service is an excellent laboratory for being prepared for bona fide assisting in communications during natural and man-made disasters. One man who strongly believes this is Mitch Stern, W1SJ.
The first thing you got to do is get involved. If you just kind of sit around and say, hey, it'd be nice for me to do these things and not do anything, well, that's not going to help. You have to get involved. You have to find out what's going on in your area. Every community has their various races or different events that you can get involved in. They're not as serious an emergency, but you learn the basics. And you have to decide what you're going to do. Well, if it's the first year you're doing it, you're going to be an Indian, not a chief. Usually people who organize these things, they have jobs set aside for the newbies, okay, where if you screw up, it's not that big a deal. And then if you do it year after year, you do the more senior jobs. So you're going to start in at the ground level, and then as you grow up, you're going to learn what types of things you'd like to do. And over the years, there's two things I enjoy doing, net control type stuff and technical stuff. Okay, I don't like the public relations things where I got to talk to a lot of people. I'd rather play with the equipment. Now, here's one that's really important. You got to do your homework. Prepare for the event. If you have a post somewhere on a course, you better make sure you know where it is. Don't go to the place and get lost and then have to ask the net control, where is it? You know, we're trying to run an event, and now you're lost. We got to figure out where you are and get you to where you got to be. So, you know, get the maps out. Go there the day before. I mean, there's just a lot of things you can do. Check the coverage of the repeater that it's going to work where you're going to be. Now, in any set case, you operate, you transmit only if you can be of assistance. Whenever there's an emergency, everyone's getting there. Here I am to save the day. Well, you're not of any help. Don't get on and say that because you're just causing more interference. The people running the operation, if they have a need, they'll put it out there. And if you can meet that need, that's great. If you can't, stand by and listen. Listening is great. That's an important part of all these things too. So it's really crucial that you do a good job because now the public is watching us. And if we look unprofessional, it ruins it for amateur. It ruins it for all of us. I mean, you know, that we become a bunch of CBers physically when that happens. So you want to be able to do the kind of job where they say, wow, you guys got your act together. And that's important. And that means that making sure that everyone in this operation works as a team and not as 20 different individuals. So in the operating, so I do net controls for things like, I've been in the New York City and Boston Marathon. I do a local one in Vermont, the Vermont City Marathon. And the biggest problem we have every single year, I call somebody on the course, I need some information. I need some information from the Mile 3 water stop in New York City because the runners have run over a big bridge for 3 miles and they're downright thirsty and all of a sudden 50,000 guests show up for a water party and they better have millions of gallons of water to meet their needs. And so I says, do you guys have your water and all the hydrants open and ready to rock and roll? And then the guy don't answers. When he doesn't answer, I panic, the race director panics, and everyone gets into a tizzy really fast. And that happens because that person is off talking to somebody or doing something or directing traffic or God knows what. Doesn't work. First thing, you got to listen to the radio. Your first priority is the net control and that line of communication. It happens a lot where I can't reach somebody and I need to reach them. So number one ability is to listen. You got to be listening on that radio and interacting with other people at the same time. You got to have the headphones on. You have to be able to be courteous to people who are right with you, but still listen. So it's almost like you got to listen in stereo, the live people and the unlive people. And in these things, you have to gather and organize information quickly. You get a request. How much supplies do you have? How many people are there? What's this condition? You got to go find out that information, ask the pertinent people what's going on. You got to boil down that information and transmit it in as few words as possible because we don't have time to have a whole speech about it. That takes quite a bit of skill. You don't have a laptop to compose your notes. You got to do it in your head. It's harder than you think. There's that think before speaking again. That comes up a lot, doesn't it? But again, before you transmit, what am I going to say? What's the message I want the net control guy to hear? Because if you ramble on and say a lot of extra words, the net control guy may miss the thing that you need to be saying. And it goes without saying, transmissions must be short. If you're giving a long discourse on the number of water bottles and somebody goes down on the course and we can't communicate that, that's not good. There's different levels of priority, so everything needs to be short so that everyone can get in there. When you're doing a public service event, it's no longer a democracy. It's a dictatorship. The supervisor says something, you do it. If you don't want to do it, you still do it. And when the thing is over, don't do it again. But when you sign up for these things, they're not going to ask you to do something illegal or dangerous. Hopefully not. So if you disagree with them, you can point out some facts. Hey, if I do this, this bad thing will happen and this bad thing will happen. And they'll say, yes, I know, do it anyway. Then you just do it. You don't get engaged in an argument. Hear that all the time. Not the place to do it. Meet with them afterwards. Usually there's an after event meeting or a series of emails. Hey, this didn't work. Change this, change that. Fine. You can discuss it in a sane and civilized manner, but not during the event. In these events, we use tactical call signs. If it's a marathon, it's mile 3, mile 5, mile 10, the race director, the trail vehicle, whatever. When you use those call signs, everyone knows who you are. They don't know your call sign. They don't know what you're doing, but when you use those, they know exactly what your job is, and the communications make sense. However, the FCC does not relieve you from identifying. You still have to identify every 10 minutes. Now, different nets handle this different ways. Some take the very illegal route, and they just dispense with identification altogether, and that happens to be most of the time. You can't do that. You have to identify. You know, it's not a waived rule. So it's a number of different ways. Some nets you just identify at the end of your little speech or transmission. Some don't do anything. I like to, every 10 minutes, I identify the net so people know what we're doing. And I say, okay, we're going to take a short pause and people can dump their call sign in as needed. So we have that 10-minute break, and it does two things. Lets the public know who's on the frequency, and it lets people identify. So now we get to equipment. When the radio dies, so do you. You're all done. Go home. You're not needed. And we've had this happen. Guy came to the New York City Marathon with one battery, and the one battery dies about 20 minutes into the event. I'm hopping on the subway and going home. I'm going to get the spare battery. The director told him, that's great, thank you, and don't come back. Don't need you. We're going to give out your job to someone else. So you should have a spare battery because batteries die. And if you have a radio with a NiCad battery and it's been sitting on the shelf for 6 months and you go to charge it up, guess what? It's going to last 20 minutes. You have to take care of those batteries like it's a lifeline because they have to be charged a certain way. So have a spare battery. In fact, have a spare radio. Stuff happens. I mean, my radios go down. Stops transmitting, doesn't put out power, the receiver breaks, all sorts of weird things happen. You carry a spare, it becomes a non-issue.
Mitch Stern, W1SJ, an avid public service participant and contester. We'll conclude Mitch's talk in a moment. This is the Rain Report.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
Learn how to use your equipment. Now, I'm not going to get into a long discourse on how the manufacturers have screwed up ham equipment so that nobody knows how to program anything anymore. That's a different forum. However, if you have the radio, it's assumed you know how to use it, which means that if we're going to change channels and it's not pre-programmed in, you better know how to A, enter the frequency, B, enter the offset, and C, enter the tone. You got to do those three things. You can't do that. You can't be useful because something might happen where the agreed upon frequencies may change. Often does. And some, oh, I don't know how to program my radio. And I have my wife's a ham and she helps out in these things. Oh, I don't have to know this. Yes, you do. And I make her up a little cheat sheet. This is how you do it. This is you, by doing this job, you have to know this because we may have to change things around midstream. Anything can happen. Go get your instruction book out, paraphrase it, make you up a flashcard, whatever, so that you can set that radio up to what you need. You don't have to do all the fancy stuff. You just have to enter frequency, offset, and tone. Save the QRP for the QRP contests. If you have an HT, punch it up to the highest power. Worried about the battery dying? Don't talk very much. Run as high as power as you can and the best antenna you can, because if you're communicating life and death communication and you fade out right in the point where you're talking about it, you've now added more seconds onto getting help. So that's why you want that reliability factor to be right there. The proper way to talk on an HT, you hold it in front of you. And actually, this is something that they do not tell you how to hold an HT. If you take the technician test, the answer is hold the HT away from your head. Okay, and how do I talk into it now? Well, it's got to be vertical. What I tell my students, hold it up and talk up into the radio. Now the antenna is above your eyes at the top of your head. It's the highest point where you can hold it. When you put an HT on your belt and try and use it with an external microphone, you are absorbing all that signal that your HT is putting out. You're cooking your kidneys, literally. Not with 2 watts, but your signal's not going anywhere. You're eating it up, and then you get noisy. And then there's a big problem with these microphones. If it's a microphone with a Vox, I tell my people, if you bring the Vox, I'm going to confiscate it. Because invariably, crowd noise will just keep triggering the thing. And the other thing that we don't want is locking microphone buttons. Because right in the middle of it, we get a lockdown. And then everyone yells, oh, there's somebody with a lockdown radio. Well, yeah, but he ain't going to hear you. So I have to bring my fox hunting equipment to these things. And I get a quick reading, and I, with a process of elimination, we figure out who it is, and we send someone over to tap them on the shoulder. That's how we eliminate it. And you can do that when you're in close quarters. It's a real pain, and it happens every event, every single year. You can count on it. And so that's one of my missions, is to use the equipment properly. Check the coverage before the event. Keying up the repeater is not checking the coverage. That just means you can key up the repeater. You may not hear anything. You have to do it with 2 radios. You do it with your car radio and an HT walking around, and you can hear on the car where you're getting noisy. Or if you cannot do that, you have somebody listen to you from afar and tape record it and say, okay, I'm standing here, okay, I'm standing here. And you can hear the swishing around. And Murphy's Law will dictate that at the point where you need the communications the most, in the medical tent or neck control, whatever, that's where the dead spot will be. Have headphones available. I don't use them. I don't like to use them, but I have them around my neck, and when I need to, it's a simple thing to put them on my ears and plug it right in. And sometimes you need it because you don't know. There may be a band playing right next to you, and they play very loud, and you can't tell the band to stop. We're doing ham radio. Doesn't work. We've given you all the things here about emergency operating. Now the things to think about. And there's no correct answers to these. These are the questions you stay up late pondering. If you were suddenly called into action 3 weeks from now, all of a sudden, boom, we have a disaster. Are you ready? Are the batteries charged? Can you find all your radios and connectors and cables, or they're in a mishmash, a big heap in the shack? Emergencies do not give you advance warning. They just have a nasty habit of happening. If the power and phone were out for weeks, would you be able to communicate? In the big Northeast blackout, which I didn't get to experience because in Vermont, they were smart enough to unplug, saving the grid. First smart thing they've done there in years, right? But in New York, I heard the amateur radio emergency service swung right into action, got on the repeater, and found out, guess what? No backup power. The last thing anyone considered. And then they went to the repeaters with the backup power, and the batteries in the repeaters lasted about 2 or 3 hours, and then they went out. So there was maybe about 1 or 2 repeaters in the greater New York area, you know, 8 million people, whatever, thousands of hams. Only 1 repeater worked. Oops. So if power and phone were out for weeks, battery's not going to help you now. And if you have a generator, you have to have a way to feed it gas or propane or something and keep it running. Can you stay on the air? I don't know what the answer is. I don't know. It's going to be tough, but I mean, that's the real test. Do you have ways to power your HTs and your radios? Well, I can run it off the car. Fine. Can you fuel the car? I don't know. If all I'm doing is charging the HT batteries, I can probably do that for a long time. If you're in the disaster zone, would you be able to do anything? The answer is probably not. When you're in the disaster zone, you're the victim, and they send the teams in to help. But you got to deal with your own situation, your own family and loved ones and whatever else. So you got to tend to that before you play radio.
Veteran public service participant Mitch Stern, W1SJ, excerpted from his talk given at the 2006 Dayton Hamvention in suburban Dayton, Ohio. Does your repeater have unique IDs? We'd like to hear them. Please send them as MP3 files to RAIN's founder producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, via email to Hap, that's 1P, hap@rainreport.com. We're looking to produce a program that showcases some of the most unique and creative repeater IDs in the world. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990-2006 RAIN, all rights reserved. I'm Neil Schaefer, AA9KK.